Blog Talk Radio.
Well, that was the theme music for Sparty Talk. But now let's play the theme music. Oh, by the way, I am Satchmo. The Thin Man DB will be joining us momentarily. But now let us play the theme music for the Michigan State football season. And welcome to Sparty Talk, where we're putting to rest the 2019 football season.
Oh, Satchmo. So sad indeed. Greetings and salutations. Welcome to the funeral.
Yeah. I mean, realistically, all right, so let's set the scene. Michigan State lost, what was it, 28-7 to Wisconsin. They lost, what, 37-38, nothing. No, they lost 28-7 to Penn State. And, they didn't score a point against Wisconsin.
They
got blown out by Ohio State.
100-17 in October by Ohio State, Wisconsin, and Penn State.
Yes. So, realistically, DV, well, all right. realistically, let's try and be real. Okay. First of all, I guess we should say bowl eligibility is still a possibility this year.
Yes, it is.
But realistically, this is what the Michigan State football team, and not just the football team, but the football program is boiled down to, hoping to get to 6 wins on an annual basis to get to a bowl game.
Yeah, that's just not good.
No, I mean...
That's not...
All right. Yeah. I mean, we should be able to beat Maryland, and we should be able to beat Rutgers, and I guess those 2 wins make us bowl eligible. There's no guarantee to beating Illinois, and there's no guarantee to beating
Michigan, right. Realistically, the way the Spartans are playing right now, they could lose both of those games. And it's weird to say that about Illinois, but you're looking at an Illinois team that has improved somehow in the last month.
And you touched on it. They've improved. You want to know what Michigan State hasn't done? They haven't improved, DB.
Oof.
It's pretty bad.
They've gotten worse as the season has gone on, which is where do we begin with that?
Even before we get to the head coach, let us be clear to all Spartan Nation. And I tweeted this from the Capitol Lounge, and I tweeted it again from the legal seafood bar in Union Station, where I split time watching the game, the Penn State game yesterday.
I'm sorry. We need to address what you just said here. Did you split time because you didn't like the clientele in one place, or you just wanted to change it up to give the Spartans good luck, or what was the reason for that?
I was at the Capitol Lounge with the alumni watching the game. And I said, I'm going to go home. And then I missed the train. And I said, well, I guess I'm going to watch the rest of the game in Union Station. And that's what happened.
Yeah.
That's it. And so here's the funny thing, right? at the legal bar, or legal seafood bar, you know, second floor Union Station. They actually tried to change the channel on the game, and I just wouldn't let them. And they're like, well, I guess you were here first. I was like, yes, I was.
So at what point in the was the score when you were in legal seafood?
There must have been about 5 minutes left in the fourth quarter when they tried to change the game.
Oh.
I mean, I watched the entire second half from legal, from that bar, legal seafood bar. So, I did watch the entire second half. I watched the first half from Capitol Lounge, second half from the legal seafood bar. Let me tell you, DB, it just wasn't working. Just was not working. And I'm sitting there and I'm watching the game. And as I tweeted from both places, this was a complete and total team breakdown. The offense was miserable. The defense was miserable. Yeah, they turned it up in the second half, but Penn State sort of took their foot off the gas too, right? The defense was miserable. Special teams was miserable. The place kicking was miserable. The punting was miserable. The returns were miserable. The blocking was miserable. You had penalties to extend drives. You had penalties to put team player in the hole. They couldn't line up correctly, DB.
Awful.
What exactly is going on here? It is a complete and total disaster.
Yeah.
And so now we got to think about this program in its totality, because to be fair, once again, the players have to take a lot of the blame, because you want to know what? There are plays to be made. Michigan State leads the nation in drops. That means the ball is hitting the receivers in the hand, DBs, and they're not catching it. If they had caught four or five of those drops, Michigan State maybe has got 17, 20 points on the board. It's a different game. So you've got that. You've got the fact that they can't block a wide receiver screen, DB. They throw it out to the wide receiver. The wide receiver gets tackled. You want to know why? No one's out there blocking for him.
Right.
Don't tell me the coaches drew up a play, plays where there were no one blocking. Of course the plays were drawn up to have blockers. It's just no one was blocking. But then you got to say, well, wait a minute. It's got to be more than just the players, right? Because, I mean, you got people jumping off sides. And, yeah, you got to blame the players for people jumping off sides. You got to blame the players for people lining up incorrectly. But then, and you got to blame the players for not fielding punts cleanly and running them back and all that sort of stuff. But then, DB, these mistakes happen week after week after week, and then they happen year after year after year. I mean, how many years can we sit on this podcast and complain about the kick return game and the punt return game?
Yeah, right. Place kickers who can't kick field goals.
Place kicker that can't keep, offensive line that can't block.
Yeah.
I mean, the dude blocked the field goal with his helmet. That's how close he got. It doinked off his helmet. And it wasn't a low kick either. That's just how much penetration he got. It's just remarkable. And it's happening year after year after year. And it just makes you think, it's like, all right, there's something more than players just not getting it and players not executing. Because at some point, the players not getting and the players not executing needs to go away. All right, so then you start peeling the layers of the onion back. It's like, well, all right, how talented is this team really? right? It's a legitimately fair question to ask. How talented is this team really? And it's becoming very clear that the defense is pretty talented, but lacks the discipline necessary to play at an elite level. They line up in the wrong spots. They take bad angles. They jump off sides, illegal hands to the face, roughing the quarterback. You name it, DB. Whatever it is, there's always a mistake that keeps the drive going, and then they can't recover from the mistake. Lack of discipline. Been there all this year. Was there part of last year as well. And this isn't a matter of the defense wearing down, DB. This is Penn State just, you know, throwing it wherever they wanted in the first half.
Yeah.
And they're coming off a bye week, so don't tell me the defense is tired and got worn down. All right? So the defense doesn't have the discipline. They have the talent, but they don't have the discipline to play at an elite level. The offense, DB, right, quite frankly, lacks the talent to have a competitive offense in the Big Ten.
Right.
We've got offensive linemen that can't get a push. You've got wide receivers that can't get separation, and when they do get separation, they drop the ball. You've got running backs that can't catch a screen pass. You've got wide receivers that can't block on wide receiver screens. That's a talent issue. And don't get me started on special teams. Why is it taking 10 years?
Yeah.
I mean, 10 years, it's gone. It feels like without a viable kick returner or punt returner.
Right.
This is – it doesn't work. And just think, DB. I mean, just think about this. We're graduating some really good players this year. And the players that are coming in to replace them don't have a lick of experience.
Yeah.
Next year could be worse.
That's frightening.
And you can trace a lot of this back, DB, to the recruiting class of 2016. I looked it up. This recruiting class, there were 20 people that enrolled. It was ranked 17th nationally. And you know I hate recruiting rankings. Just hate them with a passion. And the third best class in the Big Ten, right? It is Mark D'Antonio's most heralded recruiting class. Guess how many players are still on the team?
From that recruiting class, I'm going to say two.
Yep. Nope, seven.
Okay.
Here's who was in this recruiting class.
Yeah.
Josh King.
Mm.
Austin Robertson.
Mm.
Donnie Corley.
Yikes.
Justin Lane. All right, now Justin Lane, special case, went to the NFL early. Good for him. Naquan Jones. Tristan Jackson. Cam Chambers, Demetric Vance, Messiah DeWeaver, Kenny Like, Brandon Randall, Theo Lacusa, Mike Panishuk, Noah Davis, Austin Andrews, Luke Campbell, Joe Bocci, A.J. Arcuri, Matt Allen, and Matt Coughlin. Now, there's some good players here. Don't get me wrong, Jimmy. I mean, Coughlin, Allen, Arcuri, Bocci, Campbell, you know, Davis, Panishuk, Dilokuz. I mean, there's some good players here, but you recruit 20 players, DB. You can't come out with seven.
Right.
That's not the way college football works. That's just not the way. Well, just think about it this way. To form a two-deep chart at every position, right, you need 44 players on offense and defense. throwing special teams. So you need a minimum of 53 good players. Minimum of 53 good players. Because you're going to have injuries and all this other stuff. If your recruiting class ends up with seven players, you just extrapolate that out. And that happens to every recruiting class. I mean, it's four, that's 28 good players. And the seven aren't, I mean, of the seven, you know, only three or, I mean, only four or five are, you know, I mean, you've got Panishuk and Bocci and Coughlin. There's three, Allen, our Curry, but our Curry's been injured five. I mean, it's tough.
Yeah.
It's tough sledding. That's a complete whiff. And when you whiff on a recruiting class like that, that has ramifications, not just, I mean, it has 5, 6, 7 year ramifications.
Right.
And then you look at the coaching staff, which is where everyone wants to look at. But I would argue, DB, that when you look at the coaching staff, you've got to look at the way this coaching staff has recruited. Right? And the way they've developed their players. I mean, Michigan State doesn't have much of a margin of error. Can't whiff. And they've been whiffing a lot.
Right.
And this isn't about four-star talent and five-star talent, all that nonsense. Cam Chambers was a four-star player, right? Couldn't crack the lineup. I mean, you had Hunter Risen that was in school here. He transferred, right? And I guess he got kicked off of K-State. Is that right? I don't know. I don't want to make a statement that I don't know about. But you had Hunter Risen here. Couldn't get consistent playing time. It's not the coaching staff's fault they couldn't break the lineup.
Right.
But, you know, recruiting these elite things. And then you have Michigan State fans, you know, after all the problems and, you know, D'Antonio would kick people off the team. It's like, well, let's go back to recruiting, you know, zero stars and one stars. And, you know, I hate the star system because you recruit talent. But like, well, let's go back to recruiting these people that no one else wants and coach them off. That's the D'Antonio formula for success. And I said, no, that's not the D'Antonio formula for success. The D'Antonio formula for success is finding, unearthing NFL caliber players in places people generally aren't looking, right? It's not those players' fault that they don't have five stars. That's the fault of the system. But D'Antonio was able to go out and find them, and that's where his strength was. And then there's just the basic, then maybe there's just the basic fact, and this is just the truth of the matter, is that the state of Michigan is becoming like the state of Minnesota and the state of Missouri and the state of Nebraska and many other states in this country. The state of Michigan, primarily due to just the awfulness of the way the Michigan MHSSA or MHHSA, whatever the high school sports athletic association is in Michigan. I used to know it when I covered high school sports in Michigan. Because of the way high school sports is run and administered in Michigan, combined with a population drop in the state, means the state of Michigan just doesn't produce quality football and basketball athletes in the numbers needed to sustain a football program. They don't have enough for one school, let alone two. And this isn't just football. This is basketball. DB, when's the last time on a Tom Izzo team you had three or four kids from Detroit or Flint leading the way?
Right. A long time ago.
I mean, it happens. I mean, don't get me wrong, the state of Michigan does provide some good basketball players, and it does generate some good football players, but it doesn't generate them in the quantity and quality that happened in the 80s and the 90s. You cannot build a successful program. Doesn't matter whether the University of Michigan, Michigan State, doesn't matter. You cannot build a successful program based on the talent in the state of Michigan. It is not possible. Which means you have to recruit. And if you take a look at this 2016 class, you had 8 players from Ohio, 5 from Illinois, 4 from Michigan, 2 from New Jersey, 1 from Indiana. Sixteen of the 20 players that came in weren't from the state of Michigan, DB. Well, in order to recruit nationally, which clearly needs to happen, man, you got to change the money dynamics of the thing, right? I mean, and I credit D'Antonio for doing this part, man. You got to work on the facilities. Because you're going after kids that don't have a natural inclination to go to Michigan State.
Right.
I mean, you got to get the facilities built up. You got to get the game day experience built up. You got to get the weight room built up. You got to do all sorts of stuff. And D'Antoni, to his credit, has been doing it, right? I think from a facility standpoint, Michigan State is probably the best it's ever been.
Yeah.
But then you got a question of what type of football team do you want to be? I mean, if you listen to D'Antoni after the Wisconsin game, right? Sounds like he still wants to be Wisconsin. He wants to be that team the way Wisconsin played. But you can't play that way unless you got an NFL offensive line. And if you don't have an NFL offensive line, you've got to play more like Penn State played against Michigan State. Well, the problem is you can't do that if your guys can't block, your guys can't catch, your guys can't throw, and Lorke was off target every now and then. And you can't do it unless you're willing to be more creative in your offensive play calling than you are right now.
Right.
I mean, that said, I mean, and here's the fact of the matter is, you know, Michigan State ran a lot of the same plays Penn State did. It's just Penn State ran them better.
Yeah.
I will let you have the floor, DB. I've just been talking.
No, I think you crystallized a lot of the thoughts, and you put it in good perspective. There's so many things here. I mean, it goes beyond just play calling, and you know, I think we're way beyond the point of, you know, any of that. The errors, the inconsistency, the things happening over and over again. Yeah, good points that you make, that it is on the players. The players have to show up and do it. The coaches definitely have to be better because they're paid full-time to do that. And so what do we got here? We got a bunch of people just sort of thrown together, and it's becoming like a broken record. When I was thinking about this team, other than 2017, when they were 10-3, if I'm not mistaken, they had a very good season. We thought, okay, you know, 2016 was just an aberration. We'll move on from that. You know, I guess in my mind, there's a difference between being, you know, let's just say in a perfect world, the Spartans win their last 4 games this year. Okay, 8-4, fine. In your 4 losses, though, if you looked pretty good and were showing improvement in the 4 losses, you'd say, okay, they lost to a great Ohio State team, as it turns out. a very good Penn State team and a pretty good Wisconsin team, and they played close. They weren't close in any of those games. And so you can see the disparity of the talent. And what's troubling is it's just sort of drifted downward slowly and slowly and slowly down to the bottom. Not talking about the defense. As you said, the defense has talent. And, yeah, the defense has just sort of disappeared into bad discipline now. The worst
I think the talent, and I just want to throw this out there, and I'll let you continue. I think the offense-defense disparity reflects the talent on the defensive side of the ball versus the talent on the offensive side of the ball reflects the coaching personality of this staff, and particularly the head coach. Mark Antonio takes his best athletes and puts them on defense, right? That's just what he does. Justin Lane comes in, outstanding receiver, turns him into a defensive back. He's not the only one that, has done that. I mean, there have been plenty of players that does that, but that's Mark Antonio's tendency, right? The best athletes end up on the defensive side of the ball, and the offensive side of the ball is less of a priority. And you got to make the offensive side of the ball a priority. I mean, yeah, you want a tough defense, you want to win low-scoring games and all this sort of stuff, but in the end, you actually have to score.
Right.
Go ahead.
The biggest crime of this whole thing, and I think I always remember the podcast from last spring when D'Antonio announced this rearranging of the coaching, and your comment rings in my ears constantly. Is this just rearranging the chairs on the deck chairs on the Titanic? And little did we know on that night, back in April or whenever we said that, that is exactly what this has turned out to be. And what is the most disgusting about this whole thing is Mark D'Antonio could have been, hey, you know what, offensive staff, not working. I love you guys, but there's not a place for you here anymore. I need to bring in somebody to shake this up. And truthfully, that is what would do it. And I'm not saying that, some offensive genius would come through the door here right now and have a different result. But I think at the very least, somebody to come in the door and replace who's there and let them call their shots on offense to at least energize this program into Spartan Football 2.0. Otherwise, if D'Antonio doesn't want to make that decision, I'm going to be very clear tonight, he needs to go.
Well, see, I will make the argument right here, right now, that if they had brought in a new offensive coordinator in April, and let's just say they brought in, Wonder Boy Josh Gattis over there in Ann Arbor, they hired, Mike Locksley from Alabama, who went on to become the head coach of Maryland, whatever the situation is, I am perfectly willing to make the argument that this offense wouldn't be any better today with that coordinator than it is now, which isn't to say that it wouldn't be better in the future, BB. But I'm talking for this year, in this year alone, it wouldn't be any better. You want to know why? Because they've got an offensive line that can't block.
Right. And I'm not in any way, shape, or form arguing with that point.
Yeah.
The future is what I'm talking about.
The future is what I'm talking about, too, because clearly better talent needs to walk in that door on the offensive side of the football. And once again, for those of you listening, I'm not talking about stars. I don't care about stars. I care about talent.
Right. Right.
Better talent needs to walk in the door. And look, everyone's like, well, we had talent. We had Tristan Jackson and Cam Divers. You want to know what? Yeah, these were four-star recruits. They transferred. They've gone to other places. You want to know what they're doing in other places? They're not doing anything there either. So let's
– Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So let's be –
It wasn't like we had Justin Fields or whoever that quarterback is for Ohio State, and we let him slip through and he transferred away. I mean,
yeah,
you know.
Exactly. And, you know, let us, I mean, it's one of those things where, and let us also be perfectly clear. I mean, I think I said it earlier, you know, talking about Spartan fans that wanted to go back and recruit less talented people. No, you don't win in this thing by recruiting less talented people. You win by bringing in the most talent that you can and then coaching that talent up. That's how you win. And right now, it's clear that we don't have enough depth to survive injuries to an offensive line, DB. Right? Cole Truins hasn't played the entire year, and our offensive line looks like a mess because of it. I mean, injuries happen. Look, Brian Lewerke is, you know, they tried replacing him in the fourth quarter these last two games. You know, Lombardi doesn't look any good, and Theo Day doesn't look that much better. And by the way, D'Antonio seemed like he was all-out panic mode on Saturday, man. You know, he's got Theo Day, and they start moving the ball, and then Theo Day calls the wrong play, and, you know, in comes Lewerke, and, well, what a freaking mess that was.
Yeah. Yeah, D'Antonio's just, yeah, he's panicking now, and look, I love what Mark D'Antonio's done for the Michigan State football program. He's put it in a great place, but he's allowed this to happen too. This stain is on him. And I just feel like, is Michigan State, are we going to accept that he's going to come back in December after the season's over or whenever and say, well, you know, I believe in this coaching staff and, you know, we're just going to continue to do the same thing.
Well,
and oh,
so
by the way,
he's
going to get
year,
a big $4.3 million bonus in January.
Yeah.
And showing me nothing.
He's got him on 1 year contracts now, right? So he changed their contract. And so, yeah, I mean, you've got to believe at this point. You just got to believe people are coaching. I mean, people were coaching for their jobs this year. I mean, that had to be it. When you change the contract to a 1 year deal, the assumption is you're coaching for your job. And right now, no one's coaching. No one's getting it. There's an argument to be made, you know, and you know everyone in Ann Arbor land is, you know, thrilled with their win over Notre Dame and programs finally on the right foot and all this sort of stuff, right? There's an argument to be made, and Michigan State fans like, man, we should have done what Michigan did and went out and got this and that and all this sort of other stuff, right? You know, act and behave like the Ann Arbors. And there's an argument to be made that if Scowlface over there, right, had shown a little more continuity in his coaching staff, right, and a little more continuity in game plan and all this sort of stuff, it might have won more than one game against. It might have beaten Ohio State by now. I mean, they would be better against Michigan State. I mean. This is entirely possible, is that he's gone too far in one direction and Mark D'Antonio's gone too far in the other. And
there
does need to be a blend of continuity and development along with change. You do need to bring in fresh blood. Look, you and I, we work in the private sector. We're in business. We know about these things, right? You can't succeed entirely with homegrown talent. You need to constantly bring in fresh ideas and concept from the outside and infuse that into your organization, because if you don't do that, the organization gets stale and it falls behind. And just from a pure management consultant standpoint, which I do, right? This is one of the things I do. I can take a look at this and say, you want to know what? No, there hasn't been any new blood into the system. You know, Terrence Samuel's the closest we've had to new blood into the system. there hasn't been any new blood. There hasn't been any new concepts, right? I mean, there are new concepts, but there's no new blood. It's the same coaching tree, the same coaching philosophy, all this sort of stuff. And, yeah, they've brought in ideas from the outside and tried to incorporate what they do. But a program, an administration, a staff needs new blood. The same way they need continuity. And you have to find that balance. And I think if you're going to look at the chief argument, I mean, the chief problem D'Antonio's had is he hasn't found the balance between staying loyal and keeping the continuity. Because let's face it, that's how you develop players, right? You develop players by having a continuity of staff, and you get them to buy into the program. The program's the same year after year, and the standards are high and all this sort of stuff. So you need that continuity to develop players, but you also 100% need new blood to bring in new ideas, new concepts, new energy, different ways of saying things, all of those sorts of things that apply in the private sector. They apply right here. And D'Antonio has failed to do that, and that's why we're in the position we're in today.
And so I guess the big question for you is, and I've made my voice known here, where do you stand on Mark D'Antonio continuing with this program?
I think we should be building a statue for D'Antonio, right? Let's just make that clear. The man has earned a statue. And so now this becomes a very real question, is what does D'Antonio want his legacy to be, right? Does he want his legacy to be Duffy Doherty, or does he want his legacy to be Tom Izzo? Because Tom Izzo, DB, had to adapt and evolve. He is not the coach now that he was 10, 15, 20 years ago.
Right.
Completely different coach with completely different ideas, thoughts, concepts. And he did it by bringing in, new blood. Wife, for example, new blood, new ideas, new ways to think about stuff, right?
Right.
And part of it was forced on him when he had successful assistants left to go get coaches in other places. And part of it is he went outside of his normal tree of coaches to go get those assistants. And, yeah, it makes a difference. And he's evolved, right? He's changed the way he coaches. He changed his approach to the game. He's still preaches toughness and defense and rebounding and all of that sort of stuff, right? But take a look at how free-flowing those offenses are and how many points on the board they play. He plays a very modern, sophisticated style.
Mm-hmm.
He's evolved with the times. And you can see D'Antonio trying to evolve with the times, but it just isn't natural to him. And so, yeah, I think D'Antonio stays. You've got to say, look, you've got a choice. You can end up like Duffy Doherty, or you could end up like Tom Izzo. And if you choose to end up like Duffy Doherty, your time here will be short. And if you choose to end up like Tom Izzo, then your time will be long.
Okay.
But here's the problem. Who's going to tell him that, DB? President of the university who's been here 30 seconds? The athletic director who's been here 30 seconds? Who's going to tell him this?
Somebody's going to have to.
I mean, one of the things we have to ask as Spartan fans is, do we trust the institution? Do we trust the athletic department and the university president and all of this sort of stuff to pass this message on and say, hey, and you'll notice that we haven't indicted an individual coach. We haven't indicted an individual player in any of this discussion, right? But at the same time, we've been able to clearly identify what is wrong with the program beyond calling jet sweeps to the boundary. All right, because this isn't just about play calling. And I
right.
get why fans get upset about playing play calling and are critical about play calling. But the problems with the Michigan State program are way beyond play calling. Play calling is just was 1% of the problem.
Right.
And
that's
that gets like 99% of the complaints.
Yeah, this is beyond play calling. This is deeper than, much, much deeper than that.
And I, for one, don't trust the university to give D'Antonio this message.
No. Yeah, this is a funky, weird situation. You just had the guy who's the winningest coach in Spartan history achieved that milestone this year and could end up with an 8-4 season, which on paper doesn't look that bad. And there's a lot of things going on, as you said, beyond, you know, a lot of things you can't control beyond the walls of Michigan State. The talent, where it's at, who it is, the numbers, the kids playing or not playing, et cetera, all that stuff that really, outside of the top 10 of college football, a lot of teams and coaches and programs are struggling with that right now. When you look around college football, and there's a lot, actually, there, believe it or not, there's programs in worse shape than Michigan State.
Yeah.
I mean, just because Illinois has started to improve, sorry. I mean, okay, you can say whatever you want, even if they beat Michigan State in a couple weeks. But that doesn't mean anything. You know, one win over Wisconsin doesn't mean anything. I mean, that program has been asleep for a long time.
Well, that program, everything about that program has been asleep for a long time, except, it's a big exception, DB, Lovie Smith's beard. That thing's a terrific piece of work. I mean, look, when you're in the presence of greatness, you just have to acknowledge it. And Lovie Smith's beard is great.
Okay, bad example.
Yeah.
Look, can we just accept the fact that we're going to be bad next year? And so we can't measure progress in terms of wins and losses?
Ouch.
I mean, it's entirely possible, DB, that we could win 3 games or even 4 games next year and be a substantially better team than we were this year. I'm just throwing that possibility out there. And I could just hear Spartan Nation rolling their eyes saying, how are you a better team when you only win 3 or 4 games? It's because you finally have people who can block. And you finally have people who get separation. And the reason they're losing games is just lack of experience, not lack of talent. Do you see what I'm saying?
Right.
I mean, this could be a team that wins 4 games next year, but is actually better suited for the future than a team that wins 7 or 8 games this year.
Yeah, I mean, I think given the changing nature of college football, that's while it's certainly plausible, it's just not acceptable. I mean, you know, is Michigan State football now to become a once every 4 years or 5 years kind of good program again and then back?
I don't think that has to be the case. I don't think that has to be the case. I'm just suggesting that I think Michigan State can return to competing for a Big Ten championship every year. I just don't think it can return to that level next year.
Yeah. See, I think at this point, and probably nothing will change, short of, Mark D'Antonio maybe announcing his retirement. But I just sort of feel like, it's kind of catch-22 because on the one hand, everybody wants in situations like this to get rid of the coach. I am one of those. But then on the other hand, it's like, well, what else is there? And I'm not sure that there's anything there that excites me, you could bring in somebody younger, but that doesn't necessarily make it all better,
No. I mean, no. One thing is clear, right? Two things need to change. The way the offense is constructed and coached needs to change, right? That to me, that's clear. And two, the way Michigan State recruits needs to change.
Yeah.
And so those two things need to drive your personnel changes. And maybe it's the recruiting thing that takes privacy, right? And so it's like, you want to know what? The bottom line is we don't have enough high-caliber players on the offensive side of the ball. We need to go out and get people who are capable of recruiting those players. And then you go out and do it, right? You understand that you want to know what? In order for Michigan State to be successful, it cannot be based on players exclusively from the state of Michigan. I mean, I think fans still believe it, right? Fans still want to believe that the state of Michigan turns out this great college talent.
Yeah.
Just not there.
Yeah,
this
is a tough situation all the way around. And I'm not providing an excuse here. I'm not going to sit here and say that, oh, woe is Mark D'Antonio. I mean, when he made this decision, this is on him. So,
yep.
He's either got to get it right or he's got to step aside. The whole sport of college football has become a big rat race, worse than ever, with this transfer portal business and this, it's the same damn four or five teams that are sort of the ones winning, and everybody else is just sort of like this big clump in the middle or worse.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's reasonable, and let's face it, right? Be careful what you wish for when you go to replace a coach. I'm just gonna throw that out there. Look at USC. There were a lot of people that were glad when Pete Carroll walked out the door, like Goodwin, don't let you hit the door on the way out. USC's been nothing since Pete Carroll left.
Correct.
UCLA, man. They can't buy a win out there. They bought Chip Kelly and they can't buy a win.
Right.
There is no – I mean, before Alabama hired Nick Saban, they weren't Alabama. They were a middle of the road to lower tier SEC team.
Right, exactly.
Florida State hasn't solved any coaching problems.
No, Florida State's down the tubes right now. There's a lot of programs that are struggling. I mean,
Miami. The U.
Miami is Mark Richt, and they are having trouble figuring it out. Yeah, there's programs like Purdue, and I mentioned Illinois, and, you know, there's a whole Indiana can't figure it out. I mean, there's programs in worse shape than Michigan State. Minnesota is having quite a year, but I want to see Minnesota. I want to see what they do when they play Wisconsin. And, you know, certainly I'm not saying anything about Minnesota. You know, it's you know, they could easily have lost some of those games, but.
Here's the thing about Minnesota. It takes a while to row the boat, and the boat capsizes every now and then. And that's good for Minnesota.
Yeah.
Doesn't work in the rest of college football.
Right.
So,
well,
I mean, that's what I'm saying. Sorry. All right. I don't think D'Antonio leaving is the answer. I think D'Antonio refreshing the blood in the system, but is a much more viable solution. But I also say, knowing that, is like, you want to know what? This isn't a 1-year project. I think that's what Michigan State fans are struggling with, right? I think Michigan State fans are so tired of the play calling, they're absolutely convinced if you just put the right offensive coordinator in, everything's going to fix itself. And I'm here to tell you that is not the case. Fixing this offense is a multi-year project, and don't expect an instant fix. Even if we hire the best offensive coordinator on the market, it's going to take that person a couple of years to fix everything.
Right. And also, too, and I just don't know what's going on, but, you know, at a certain point, the Spartans are way too injured too much. And
yeah,
maybe that's just bad luck, but when it's happening constantly,
it feels like a historic run of bad luck, right? I mean, it feels like William H. Macy in the cooler. It's just
right. And at a certain point, it might be, you know, while you're changing the offensive staff, maybe change up the training staff.
And it even hurts me to say this, but you want to know what? Ken Manny's regarded as one of the best in the business, if not the best.
Yeah. But
there's clearly something wrong.
Yeah, something's wrong. Yeah.
It's true in football. It's true in basketball, too. I mean, the Michigan State basketball team is as snake bit by injuries as any college basketball team I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
And on that note, shall we segue over into professional segue?
I think we've said all we're going to say about the
football team.
Yeah, I think we're going to say let's put a little bow on the discussion, though. I think you and I tend to be in agreement. There needs to be new coaching staff in the Michigan State football team. That doesn't mean D'Antonio's got to go, but there needs to be new blood that comes in the system, and that new blood needs to change – not just the offense, right? The new blood needs to change the organizational approach to recruiting, to player development, to play calling, to execution on the field, right? And so this is not a simple, let's go get someone that runs a better system sort of fix. That's all.
Right.
All right. All right. Someone that runs a really good system, Tom Izzo, came dressed up as the Incredible Hulk for Midnight Madness. You gotta love it. And Susie Merchant came as another Marvel superhero. It's just outstanding. and it looked like Izzo was like on stilts too, so he's like a 7-footer. And so I'm sure he enjoyed that. But preseason number one, DB, first time Michigan State's ever been in preseason number one. But the injury bug has, they haven't even played a game, and the injury bug's hit Michigan State.
Yeah.
Josh Langford re-injured his ankle in his foot, or injured his ankle in his foot, and he might be out for the season. Who knows? They're going to reevaluate in December. In December, but DB, what a blow. With Josh Langford,
yeah,
this is an NCAA title contender. And without him, who knows?
Right. Yeah, it'll really test the depth of the team. And also, you know, you have a bunch of young guys who haven't seen a lot of action yet, and we don't know what we're getting out of them. And so they're either going to do really well, or they're going to struggle, or some combination of it. And so we can only hope for the best on Langford.
Yeah, I mean, well, look, we're all rooting for Josh Langford.
Josh Langford's is a tremendous human being, first and foremost. And so we're rooting for him on that front. And then he's a tremendous asset to the team, so we're rooting for him on that front. Whatever way, we're rooting hard for him, and we hope for the best. And it's disappointing because, DB, with Josh Langford, Josh Langford's a player that can go out and get you buckets, right? He's a guy, shot clock running down, going to create his own shot, create space, get that shot off, mid-range jumper, long-range jumper, get to the hoop. He is going to get you buckets, and he's going to take that pressure off of Cassius Winston, secondary ball handler, give him the ball at the end of the shot clock, terrific defender, all of these sorts of things, keeps Cassius Winston fresh, all of that sort of stuff, and you just throw that right out the window. And it is an absolutely devastating blow. But, I mean, let's run through the roster, because the roster itself is pretty good. You've got Cassius Winston. You got freshman Rocket Watts, who, you know, has potential. But as we know, it takes a while for freshmen to play. You got Joey Hauser. They're appealing his transfer thing, right? I don't think he's going to make the team this year. The NCAA is going to deny it, but possibility. You got Xavier Tillman, right? Definite starter. Cassius Winston, definite starter. Between Winston and Tillman, I think it's the best guard center or guard big combination in the country, without a doubt. Then you have Aaron Henry, who was really good last year, and if he takes that next step, he could be, you know, that guy that you go to in the middle of the games and say, all right, Aaron, go get us a bucket, go make a play, and do that sort of stuff. He's got that skill and talent. So those are three starters that sort of lock them in, Winston, Tillman, and Henry. Arnes, if he can stay healthy, would start, but he's already rolled his ankle or twisted his ankle. He's got an ankle problem. Foster Lawyer, DB. This is a big year for him.
Right.
He needs to show that he can knock down open shots. I mean, he had that nice game in the NCAA tournament, right? But now he's got to show that he can play. And he can spell Cassius Winston and get some quality minutes behind him and be counted on to do some stuff. You've got Kyle Arnes, who I talked about, Braden Burr, Thomas Kittier, who's definitely a candidate to get some minutes down in the post, whether it's alongside Tillman or backing him up. Marcus Bingham, DB, a point guard in a 7-footer's body. A lot of this season could just depend on how well Marcus Bingham and Gabe Brown develop, right? Gabe Brown's got that sweet jump shot from the outside, a lot of size. Can Bingham and Brown, are they strong enough to bang defensively? Are they consistent enough on the offensive side to show us some things. Then you've got Connor George, Jack Hoiberg, Malik Hall, and Julius Marble are a couple of big guys, freshmen that are coming in that are expected to contribute. Brock Washington could contribute as a guard. And then, I'm just happy for Tom Izzo on this. You've got Stephen Izzo, Tom's son, on the team as a walk-on.
Mm-hmm.
And do you know there are actually people that are mad about this? Have you heard about this?
No.
Yeah, apparently people are mad that Izzo let his son walk onto the team. And I'm sitting there going, wait a minute. It's not like Izzo's going to put this kid in the game, his son in the game, with the game on the line to shoot a three-pointer and to win the game. He's not going to do that. I mean, he's going to be the last player off the bench. He's only going to get into the game when Michigan State's up 25 or 30. The crowd's going to go nuts. But more importantly, and I mean, this is the key. Izzo's missed so much of his son's life growing up in devotion to Michigan State and Michigan State basketball. The least we could do is say, hey, let's let you reclaim some of that father-son time by having him on campus and on the team. I really don't see what the problem is.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I don't know. Are you at all sympathetic to the people complaining about nepotism?
No, that's just ridiculous. I mean, he's a walk-on. You know, he gets to be part of the program. And I'm sure if he wanted to go, you know, if he had an opportunity to go play somewhere, Tom Izzo wouldn't think twice about it. You know, if there was some other school somewhere that he said, Dad, you know, I really want to start, I really want to play. And, you know, he knows he's not going to play in the Big Ten, but maybe it's a smaller school somewhere, lower division. Sure. I think Tom Izzo would say, go for it. Nah, these people that are crying about it, forget that. Everyone's so reactive to everything now, you know?
Yeah, it's just annoying.
Yeah, it's annoying.
It's just annoying. All right. With all of that said, I want to take a look at the Michigan State basketball schedule for a second. They are playing Kentucky, open the season against Kentucky. At Madison Square Garden, at a mid-TV. Sashmo tempted to go to that game. It's a Tuesday night game. Late game, 9:30. They then play Binghamton, also known as Tony Kornheiser U. Then, for reasons I don't understand, they're at Seton Hall. I guess this is this Big Ten, Big East challenge. The game's in Newark. I got to admit, I'm half tempted to go to that, too. The Prudential Center, DB, for those of you that don't live.
Where the former New Jersey Nets, New Jersey Nets played and the New Jersey Devils play.
Yep. It's basically right across the street from the train station there. I mean, you could catch the train from anywhere in the Northeast, go to the game, watch the game, get out. You'll be in good shape to get home. Anyway, just throwing that out there. So sort of tempted by that. So then they got Charleston Southern, which Charleston Southern has fielded competitive teams in the past. Then you've got Virginia Tech coming to East Lansing. I think that's part of the ACC Big Ten challenges, right? No, maybe not. Oh,
no,
Hawaii.
Hawaii. Yeah.
Hawaii.
The ACC Big Ten challenge finally making an appearance in East Lansing.
Yeah, finally. Yeah, they took their time, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Duke, by the way, number 4 team in the country. And then once you get out of that, then Big Ten play opens up in early December, which I hate. You've got this weird schedule. You got Rutgers. Then Michigan State plays Oakland. Then they play Northwestern.
then they play Eastern, and then they play Western, and then they play Illinois. Who constructed this schedule? I don't like it. I mean,
Big
Ten
office.
Don't like it.
Big Ten office.
Yeah. So it's a good, I guess the long and short, it's a good out of conference schedule. You've got Kentucky. Seton Hall actually has a good team this year. You've got Duke. You've got Virginia Tech. And Virginia Tech's known to rise up and bite top teams.
Yeah,
you got to worry about that.
Yeah, you can't sleep on them yet.
Yeah. And Michigan State ends the season with a game against Ohio State. And I got to admit, I liked it better when Michigan State was ending the season against Michigan. That was fun.
Yeah.
So the Big Ten, once again, looks at a good thing and screws it up.
Yeah.
All right. What are your emotions, thoughts, predictions going into this college hoop season?
Well, I always get nervous about the Spartans being number one just because the Spartans do better when they're playing back in the field a little bit.
Yeah. But I think that's something we as fans just have to get over. I think we feel that more than the players on the team. I think Izzo feels it too, right? But I don't think the players actually feel that. They just go out and play.
Right.
I think sometimes we just project onto our team.
Exactly. I think every fan does that.
Yeah.
With whoever they root for. I think, you know, as you would think, talk about the roster, I'm just like, you know, I'm really excited about this team. I mean, I'm excited where it could go, what it could do. You know, do I think the Spartans are going to win the national championship? I have no idea. I mean, we've seen so many crazy things happen one way or the other. It's really hard to say. It's hard to project that out. You don't know how it's going through the season. I do know this. I mean, I feel like this team has got every reason to believe that it could be a Final Four team and win the Big Ten championship and maybe win the Big Ten conference tournament. I mean, the possibilities are endless.
I would feel a lot better about this team with Josh Langford. Without Josh Langford,
yeah,
a lot of development has to happen, right?
Yeah.
With Josh Langford, this is a Final Four team. This is a national championship caliber team. Without him, it feels like a Sweet 16 team, unless you get some development. Unless, you know, Joey Hauser becomes a lot eligible. Unless Marcus Bingham, unless Gabe Brown starts shooting lights out and Marcus Bingham starts swatting shots left and right. And then all of a sudden, you can see it. So I think the potential is there for this to be a great team, not just a good team, but a great team. But potential and actually being it are two different things. So,
right.
But I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful.
Yeah, either way, I mean, either way, it's going to be night and day between Michigan State football and Michigan State basketball. I mean, we're gonna go through the Big Ten basketball season, and we're going to be kind of like, yeah, you know what? I mean, this is fun, you know. Every single night, you're going to be, you know, the Breslin's going to be energetic, and, you know, when the Spartans play there, and you know, you just know you're getting the highest quality possible, you know, and there's no whiff on recruits and any of that stuff, you know. And, yeah. They're not going to be sitting there going, well, they can't block down low, you know. I mean, we're not going to be, you know, we've seen this for the last 5 years. I mean, there won't be any of that talk. We won't have any podcasts like that. But, you know, so Izzo needs a new offensive staff, you know. Negotiable design, you know, all this stuff, blah, blah, blah. Oh, man. The Rose Bowl seems like it was so long ago. So sad.
No, but it will be nice to be in a good mood after watching the game. Maybe.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, are we doing any more podcasts about Spartan football this year?
Yeah, we probably should.
I mean, I guess let's see where they're at in a couple weeks. If they somehow, I guess we can come back in a couple weeks and, you know, way or the other, after Illinois, before Michigan, we could talk a little about it, I guess.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think our podcast schedule is to be driven by the following. One is we've got to do a podcast surrounding this, either before or after.
Yeah.
And so that's the first thing. The second thing, and I mean, I feel like we need to do a podcast after Michigan State plays Kentucky in basketball. Because they're going to be the top two teams in the country, DB.
Right. So maybe a good time to do that would be right before the Michigan football game, and then after that, Michigan State, Kentucky.
Yeah, I mean, the game's on November 5th, so maybe we do one before, on the 6th or 7th or the 8th or something like that. But I think it makes sense doing that. And so, yes, I think it makes sense to do a game there and then catch up on where we are in football at that point. And then depending on, you know, just how bad or well or poorly the Michigan game goes, we might have to do a pod there. And then we'll probably have to do a pod surrounding Duke, Michigan State.
Sounds like a plan. Sounds like we have a identity for our podcast, and we're not going to whiff on it.
Yeah. 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 Our identity is Michigan State basketball.
Oh, Pete Coltrane always gets his man. Come on, children. I'm not kidding.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, right.
All right. Well, yeah. I think, you know, let's end with us laughing, DB.
Yeah, don't get us started on the Red Wing.
Yeah, definitely don't get us started on the Red Wing. Proof that there's a team in Michigan worse than the Michigan State Spartan football team. On that note, everyone, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.